వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సభప్రభ నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా శివశక్త్యాయుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం న చేదేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి అతస్త్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
Shri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning. Greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday, on the 16th of July 2020. And with me, Team Radio Sai Sunil, welcoming you to this morning segment, Divine Glory on Thursday Live from the studios of Sri Satya Sai Media Center here at Prashanti Nilayam. At the outset, let me first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. What is real surrender and what is not? Bhagwan lovingly teaches us today, and I quote, "The word surrender has been misinterpreted and people promote idleness in the name of surrender. We think that our mind, thought and body have been surrendered to the Lord. Your mind is not under your own control. And under such circumstances, how can you hold it and give it to the Lord? You have no control over your own body. If you have a small cut, blood oozes from your body and you run to a doctor. If this is your body and if you have complete control over it, why is it that you are not able to control the outflow of the blood? That being the case, to say that you have surrendered your mind and body to the Lord is a statement which is untrue. This word surrender conveys that there is someone who gives and someone who accepts, and that you are surrendering to someone. There is a feeling of duality implied in the word surrender, in this word surrender. The true meaning of surrender is the recognition of the fact that in everyone and everywhere, God is present." Unquote. This was taken from Chapter 3 of Summer Showers, 1974. Dear listener, today the world is continuing with lockdowns and social distancing due to the spread of the coronavirus disease or the COVID-19. And let us continue to take all the precautions mandated by the government and the health department, and also maintain personal and community hygiene. Also, let us continue to engage in prayers at our own places for world peace. Talking about prayers, let me now play for you the Krimi mantra or the verse. And this verse is from the Krishna Yajurveda Taittiriya Aranyaka. And the efficacy of this mantra is in destroying all the harmful germs and viruses. And here it is.
Om Atrinatva Krime Hanmi Kanvena Jamadagnina Vishvavaso Brahmana Hataha Krimina Gumraja Apyesha Vistapatir Hataha Atho Mata Atho Pita Atho Sthura Atho Kshudra Atho Krishna Atho Shveta Atho Ashatika Hata Shveta Bhissaha Sarve Hata Ahara Vadya Shrutasya Havisho Yatha Tat Satyam Yadamuyamasya Jambhayo Adadami Tadahitate Khanthan Rasi Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Dear listener, that was the Krimi Mantra, popularly known as the Krimi Mantra. And this mantra is chanted daily in the morning and evening Mandir prayer sessions here at Prashanti Nilayam. And let me also tell you, for those of you who don't know, that these prayer sessions are streamed live for all to listen on Radio Sai's Prashanti Mandir Live YouTube channel, Sri Satya Sai Baba Facebook page, and of course Radio Sai's Asia stream and Telugu stream, both in the morning at 8 a.m. and in the evening at 5 p.m. So you could log on at these times. The time right now in our studios is 51 minutes past 9 a.m. that is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I've lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book, Sri Sai Satcharitra by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by the second part of a Tryst with Divinity conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent diabetologist and also presently the trustee of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust here at Prashanti Nilayam. This conversation is taken from our archives. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemant Pant. We are thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a happy, holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. Also praying to Lord Almighty that the pandemic, the suffering caused by the pandemic, by the coronavirus disease, be eradicated and all the suffering come to an end at the earliest. Samasta lokaha sukhino bhavantu.
Chapter 42. Baba's passing away. Previous indication: averting death of Ramchandra Dada Patil and Tatya Kote Patil, charity to Lakshmibai Shinde, last moment. This chapter describes the passing away of Baba. Preliminary. The stories given in the previous chapters have shown that the light of Guru's grace removes fear of the mundane existence, opens the path of salvation, and turns our misery into happiness. If we always remember the feet of the Sadguru, our troubles come to an end, death loses its sting, and the misery of this mundane existence is obliterated. Therefore, those who care for their welfare should carefully listen to these stories of Sai Samarth, which will purify their minds. In the beginning, Hemant Pant dwells on Dr. Pandit's worship and is marking Baba's forehead with Tripund, three horizontal lines. But as this has already been described in chapter 11, it has been omitted here. Previous indication: the readers up till now heard the stories of Baba's life. Let them now hear attentively Baba's passing away. Baba got a slight fever on 28 September 1918. The fever lasted for 2 or 3 days, but later Baba gave up his food and thereby grew weaker and weaker. On the 17th day, Tuesday the 15th October 1918, Baba left his mortal coil at about 2:30 p.m. 2 years before this, in 1916, Baba gave an indication of his passing away, but nobody understood it then. It was as follows. On the Vijayadashmi day, Baba all of a sudden got into wild rage in the evening when people were returning from Simolangan, crossing the border or limits of the village. Taking off his headdress, kafni and langota, he tore them and threw them in the dhuni before him. On being fed this offering, the fire in the dhuni began to burn brighter and Baba shone still brighter. He stood there stark naked and with his burning red eyes shouted, "You fellows now have a look and decide, finally, whether I am a Muslim or a Hindu." Everybody was trembling with fear and no one dared to approach Baba. After some time, Bhagoji Shinde, the leper devotee of Baba, went boldly near him and succeeded in tying a langot around his waist. And he said, "Baba, what is all this? Today is Simolangan, Dasara holiday." Baba, striking the ground with his satka, said, "This is my Simolangan." Baba did not cool down till 11 p.m. and the people doubted whether the Chavadi procession would ever take place that night. After an hour, Baba resumed his normal condition and, dressing himself as usual, attended the Chavadi procession as described before. By this incident, Baba gave a suggestion that Dasara was a proper time for him to cross the border of life, but none understood its meaning then. Baba gave another indication also as follows. Averting death of Ramchandra and Tatya Patil. Sometime after this, Ramchandra Patil became seriously ill. He suffered a lot. He tried all remedies, but finding no relief, despaired of his life and was waiting for the last moment. Then, one midnight, Baba suddenly stood near his bed. Patil held his feet and said, "I've lost all hopes of life. Please tell me definitely when I shall die." Merciful Baba said, "Do not be anxious. Your hundi has been withdrawn and you will soon recover. But I'm afraid of Tatya Patil. He will pass away on Vijayadashmi of 1918 AD. Do not divulge this to anybody, not to him, for he will be terribly frightened." Ramchandra Dada got well, but he felt nervous about Tatya's life, for he knew that Baba's word was unalterable and that Tatya would breathe his last within 2 years. He kept this hint a secret, told it to no one but to Bala Shimpi, a tailor. Only these two persons, Ramchandra Dada and Bala Shimpi, were in fear and suspense regarding Tatya's life. Ramchandra Dada soon left his bed and was on his legs. Time passed quickly. The month of Bhadrapad of Shaka 1840-1918 was ending and Ashwin was approaching. True to Baba's word, Tatya fell sick and was bedridden, and so he could not come for Baba's darshan. Baba was also down with fever. Tatya had full faith in Baba. Tatya's illness began to grow from bad to worse and he could not move at all, but always remembered Baba. The predicament of Baba began to grow equally worse. The day predicted, that is Vijayadashmi, was impending and both Ramchandra Dada and Bala Shimpi were terribly frightened about Tatya and their bodies, trembling and perspiring with fear, thought that, as predicted by Baba, Tatya's end was near. Vijayadashmi dawned and Tatya's pulse began to beat very slow and he was expected to pass away shortly. But a curious thing happened. Tatya remained. His death was averted and Baba passed away instead. It seemed as if there was an exchange. People said that Baba gave up his life for Tatya. Why did he do so? He alone knows, as his ways are inscrutable. It seems, however, that in this incident, Baba gave a hint of his passing away, substituting Tatya's name for his own. Next morning, 16th October, Baba appeared to Dasganu at Pandharpur in his dream and said to him, "The masjid collapsed. All the oilmen and grocers of Shirdi harassed me a lot, so I leave the place. I therefore come to inform you here. Go there quickly and cover me with buckle flowers." Dasganu got the information too from Shirdi letters. So he came to Shirdi with his disciples and started bhajan and kirtan and sang the Lord's name all throughout the day before Baba's samadhi, himself weaving a beautiful garland of Lord Hari's name. He placed it on Baba's samadhi and gave a mass feeding in Baba's name. Charity to Lakshmi Bai. Dasara or Vijayadashmi is regarded by all the Hindus as the most auspicious time, and it is befitting that Baba should choose this time for his crossing the border line. He was ailing some days before the last moment. He sat up without anybody's aid and looked better. People thought that the danger had passed off and he was getting well. He knew that he was to pass away soon, and therefore he wanted to give away some money as charity to Lakshmi Bai Shinde. Baba pervading all creatures. This Lakshmi Bai Shinde was a good and well-to-do woman. She was serving in the masjid day and night. Except Bhagat Mahasapati, Tatya and Lakshmi Bai, none was allowed to step in the masjid at night. Once, while Baba was sitting in the masjid with Tatya in the evening, Lakshmi Bai came and saluted Baba. The latter said to her, "Oh Lakshmi, I am very hungry." Off she went saying, "Baba, wait a bit, I will return immediately with bread." She did return with bread and vegetables and placed the same before Baba. He took it and gave it to a dog. Lakshmi Bai then asked, "What is this, Baba? I ran in haste, prepared bread with my own hands for you, and you threw it to a dog without eating a morsel of it? You gave me trouble unnecessarily." Baba replied, "Why do you grieve for nothing? The appeasement of the dog's hunger is the same as mine. The dog has a soul. The creatures may be different, but the hunger of all is the same, though some speak and others are dumb. Know for certain that he who feeds the hungry really serves me with food. Regard this as truth." This is an ordinary incident, but Baba thereby propounded a great spiritual truth and showed its practical application in daily life without hurting anybody's feelings. From this time onward, Lakshmi Bai began to offer him daily bread and milk with love and devotion. Baba accepted it and ate it lovingly. He took a part of this and sent the remainder through Lakshmi Bai to Radha Krishnamai, who always relished and ate Baba's remnant prasad. This bread story should not be considered as a digression. It shows how Sai Baba pervaded all the creatures and transcended them. He is omnipresent, birthless, deathless, and immortal. Baba remembered Lakshmi Bai's service. How could he forget her? Just before leaving the body, he put his hand in his pocket and gave her just 5 rupees and then 4 rupees. In all, 9 rupees. This figure 9 is indicative of the 9 types of devotion described in chapter 21, or it may be the dakshina offered at the time of Simolangan. Lakshmi Bai was a well-to-do woman, and so she was not in want of any money. Baba might have suggested to her and brought to her notice the 9 characteristics of a good disciple mentioned in the 6th verse of chapter 10, Skanda 11 of the Bhagavat, wherein first 5 and then four characteristics are mentioned in the first and second couplets. Baba's gift of nine, she will remember ever. Being so watchful, Baba also took other precautions in his last moment. He ordered them all to clear off with due consideration for his devotees. Kaka Sahib Dikshit, Papu Sahib Bhutti, and others were in the masjid, anxiously waiting upon Baba. But he asked them to go to the Wada and return after meals. They could not leave Baba's presence, nor could they disobey him. So with heavy hearts and heavy feet, they went to the Wada. They knew that Baba's condition was very serious and that they did not forget this. They sat for meals, but their mind was elsewhere. It was with Baba. Before they finished, news came to them of Baba's shedding the mortal coil. Leaving their dishes, they ran to the masjid and found that Baba rested finally on Bayaji's lap. He did not collapse on the ground, nor did he lie on his bed, but sitting quietly on his seat and doing charity with his own hand, left the mortal coil. Saints embody themselves and come into this world with a definite mission. And after that is fulfilled, they pass away as quietly and easily as they came. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 43 and 44. Baba's passing away continued. Preparation, Samadhi Mandir, breaking of the brick, 72 hours Samadhi, Jogs Sannyas, Baba's nectar-like words. Chapters 43 and 44 continue the story of Baba's passing away, and therefore they are taken together. Previous preparation. It is the general practice amongst the Hindus that when a man is about to die, some good religious scripture is read out to him with the object that his mind should be withdrawn from worldly things and fixed in spiritual matters, so that his future progress should be natural and easy. Everybody knows that when King Parikshit was cursed by the son of a Brahmin Rishi and was to die after a week, the great sage Sukhdev expounded to him the famous Bhagavad Puran in that week. This practice is followed even now, and the Gita, Bhagavad and other sacred books are read out to dying persons. Baba, being an incarnation of God, needed no such help, but just to set an example to the people, he followed this practice. When he knew that he was to pass away, he asked one Mr. Vaz to read Ram Vijay to him. Mr. Vaz read the book once in the week. Then Baba asked him to read the same again day and night, and he finished the second reading in 3 days. Thus, 11 days passed. Then again, he read for 3 days and was exhausted. So Baba let him go and kept himself quiet. He abided in his self and was waiting for the last moment. 2 or 3 days earlier, Baba had stopped his morning walks and begging rounds and sat quietly in the masjid. He was conscious till the last and was advising the devotees not to lose heart. He let nobody know the exact time of his departure. Kaka Sahib Dikshit and Sriman Bhutti were dining daily with him in the masjid. That day, 15th October, after the aarti, he asked them to go to their residence for dining. Still a few, like Lakshmi Bai Shinde, Bagoji Shinde, Bayaji, Lakshman Bala Shimpi and Nana Sahib Nimonkar remained there. Shama was sitting down on the steps. After giving 9 rupees to Lakshmi Bai Shinde, Baba said he was not feeling well there in the masjid and that he should be taken to the Wada Bhutti, where he would be all right. While saying these last words, he leaned on Bayaji's body and breathed his last. Bhagoji noticed that his breathing had stopped, and he immediately told this to Nana Sahib Nimonkar, who was sitting nearby. Nana Sahib brought some water and poured it in Baba's mouth. The water came out. Then he cried loudly, "Oh Deva!" Baba seemed to open his eyes and say "Ah" in a low tone. But it soon became evident that Baba had left his mortal body for good. The news of Baba's passing away spread like a wildfire in the village of Shirdi, and all people, men, women, children, ran to the masjid and began to mourn this loss in various ways. Some cried out loudly, some wallowed on, and some fell down senseless in the streets. Tears ran down from the eyes of all, and everyone was filled with sorrow. Some people started remembering the words of Sai Baba. Somebody said that Maharaj told his devotees that in time to come, he would appear as a lad of 8 years. These are the words of a saint, and hence nobody should take doubt about them, because in the Krishna avatar, Chakrapani or Lord Vishnu performed this very deed. Krishna appeared before Devaki in the prison as a lad of 8 years, who had bright complexion and who wielded weapons in his forearms. In that incarnation, Lord Krishna lightened the burden of the earth. This incarnation of Sai Baba was for the uplift of his devotees. Then, where is the reason for doubt? The way of the saints are really inscrutable. This contact of Sai Baba with his devotees is not only for one generation, but it is there for the last 72 generations. Generating such ties of love, it appears that Maharaj Sai Baba has gone for a tour, and the devotees had a firm belief that he will return soon. Then the question arose, how to lay Baba's body to rest? Some Muslims said that the body should be interred in an open space and a tomb built over it. Even Kushal Chand and Amir Shakkar shared this opinion. But Ramchandra Patil, the village officer, said to the villagers with a firm and decided tone, "Your thought is not acceptable to us. Baba's body should be placed nowhere except in the Wada." Thus, people were divided on this point, and discussion regarding this went on for 36 hours. On Wednesday morning, Baba appeared to Lakshman Mama Joshi in his dream, and drawing him by his hand said, "Get up soon. Bapu Sahib thinks I am dead and so he won't come. You do the worship and the Kakar Aarti." Lakshman Mama was a village astrologer and the maternal uncle of Shama. He was an orthodox Brahmin and daily worshipped Baba first thing in the morning and then all the village deities. He had full faith in Baba. After the vision, he came with all the puja materials and, not minding the protests of the Maulvis, he did the puja and the Kakar Aarti with due formalities and went away. Then, at noon, Bapu Sahib Jog came with all the others and went through the noon Aarti ceremony as usual. After paying due respect to Baba's words, the people decided to place his body in the Wada and started digging the central portion there. In the evening of Tuesday, the sub-inspector came from Rahata and others turned up from other places and they all agreed to the proposal. Next morning, Amir Bhai came from Mumbai and Mamlatdar from Kopargaon. The people seemed divided in their opinion. Some insisted on interring his body in the open field. The Mamlatdar, therefore, took a general plebiscite and found that the proposal to use the Wada secured double the number of votes. He, however, wanted to refer the matter to the collector, and Kaka Sahib Dixit got himself ready to go to Ahmednagar. In the meanwhile, by Baba's inspiration, there was a change in the opinion of the other people, and all the people unanimously voted for the proposal. On Wednesday evening, Baba's body was taken in a procession and brought to the Wada and was interred there with due formalities in the Garbha, the central portion reserved for Muralidhar. In fact, Baba became the Muralidhar and the Wada became a temple and holy shrine where so many devotees since then have been going to find rest and peace. All the rituals for Baba were duly performed by Bala Sahib Bhatte and Upasani, a great devotee of Baba. It may be noted here that, as observed by Professor Narke, Baba's body did not get stiff, though it was exposed for 36 hours, and that all the limbs were elastic and his kafni could be taken out without being torn to pieces. Breaking of the brick. Some days before Baba's departure, there occurred an ominous sign foreboding the event. There was in the masjid an old brick on which Baba rested his hand and sat. At night, he leaned against it and had his asana. This went on for many years. One day, during Baba's absence, a boy who was sweeping the floor took it up in his hand, and unfortunately it slipped and fell down and got broken into two pieces. When Baba came to know about this, he bemoaned its loss, saying, "It is not the brick, but my fate that has been broken into pieces. It was my lifelong companion. With it, I always meditated on the self. It was as dear to me as my life. It has left me today." Some may raise a question here. Why should Baba express this sorrow for such an inanimate thing as a brick? To this, Hemad Pant replies that saints incarnate in this world with the express mission of saving the poor, helpless people. And when they embody themselves and act with the people, they act like them. That is, outwardly they laugh, play and cry like all the other people, but inwardly they are wide awake to their duties and mission. 72 hours samadhi. 32 years before this, in 1886, Baba made an attempt to cross the borderline. On a Marg Shirsha Purnima day, Baba suffered from a severe attack of asthma. To get rid of it, Baba decided to take his pran high up and go into samadhi. He said to Bhagat Mahalsipati, "Protect my body for 3 days. If I return, it will be all right. If I do not, bury my body in that open land and fix two flags there as a mark." After saying this, Baba fell down at about 10 p.m. His breathing stopped as well as his pulse. It seemed as if his pran had left the body. All the people, including the villagers who came there and wanted to hold an inquest and bury the body in the place pointed by Baba. But Mahalsipati prevented this. With Baba's body on his lap, he sat full 3 days guarding it. After 3 days passed, Baba showed signs of life at 3 in the morning. His breathing commenced. His abdomen began to move. His eyes opened, and stretching his limbs, Baba returned to consciousness again. From this and other accounts, let the readers consider whether Sai Baba was a 3.5 cubits body that he occupied for some years and that he left thereafter, or he was the self inside. The body composed of the 5 elements is perishable and transient, but the self within is the thing, the absolute reality, which is immortal and intransient. This pure being, consciousness or Brahma, the ruler and controller of the senses and mind, is Sai. This pervades all things in the universe and there is no space without it. For fulfilling his mission, he assumed the body, and after it was fulfilled, he threw away the body and assumed his infinite aspect. Sai ever lives, as also the previous incarnation of God Dattatreya, Sri Narasimha Saraswati of Gangapur. His passing away is only an outward aspect, but in reality, he pervades all animate and inanimate things and is their controller and ruler. This can be and is even now experienced by many who surrender themselves completely to him and worship him with wholehearted devotion. Though it is not possible for us to see Baba's form now, but if we go to Shirdi, we shall find his beautiful lifelike portrait adorning the masjid. This has been drawn by Shamrao Jaikar, a famous artist and well-known devotee of Baba. To an imaginative and devout spectator, this portrait can give even today the satisfaction of taking Baba's darshan. Though Baba had no outward body now, he lives there and everywhere and will affect the welfare of the devotees even now, as he was doing before when he was embodied. Saints like Baba never die. Though they look like men, they are in reality God Himself.
Dear listener, Sairam and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series of conversations with people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan Baba. Today we bring you the second part of the conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent Indian diabetologist from Chennai, South India. He is the chairman and chief of diabetology at Dr. Mohan's Diabetes Speciality Center. This institution, based in Chennai, is a World Health Organization collaborating center for prevention and control of non-communicable diseases and also an International Diabetes Federation center of education. Additionally, Dr. Mohan is the president and director of the Madras Diabetes Research Foundation. This research foundation, which Dr. Mohan established in 1996, has published more than 800 papers, including over 500 original research articles in peer-reviewed journals, as well as at least 120 chapters in the textbooks on diabetes, endocrinology, and internal medicine. Dr. Mohan, over the years, has received numerous awards and fellowships. In 2012, the Government of India conferred on him one of the highest civilian awards, Padma Shri, for his yeoman contribution in the field of diabetes treatment and research in India. In 2013, he was awarded fellowship from American College of Physicians, USA, as well as from American College of Endocrinology, USA. In the same year, he was also conferred fellowship from the World Academy of Sciences for the advancement of science in developing countries. One can visit his website, drmohan.com, that is drmohan.com, to know more about him. What is significant is, in 1992, he was drawn to the Sai fold, and since then, he has had many incredible moments of experiencing the divine in his life at various levels. Bhagwan very graciously blessed him to be the convener of the Sri Satya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu, in 2007. Besides discharging his responsibility, he is also very active in conducting free rural diabetes screening camps in several villages of Tamil Nadu. Radio Sai's Bishu Prishti had a conversation with him in November 2013, in which he began with sharing Swami's instructions about diabetes management and then moved on to his journey to Swami and the precious lessons he had learned at his lotus feet. So here is the second part of this conversation.
Sometimes the best of doctors are stumped. They just don't know what to do. There was a Muslim gentleman who came and he had undergone a surgery, a small anal surgery he had undergone, and he had a very low pain threshold. He cannot stand any pain, the least of pain, and this is a very painful area. So he had been undergone a surgery there, and the first night after that operation, he didn't sleep at all. He had intense pain. So finally we had to give him Fortwin and then Pethidine. These are the narcotic drugs which you normally give as a last resort. I gave him that also.
But painkillers.
Painkillers. Narcotic painkillers they're called. Okay. If you give them for long enough, they get addicted to that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave it to him. I said, you know, he needs a pain. He's shouting with pain. We gave him that. He didn't sleep. The whole night with that also, he didn't sleep. So next evening, I'd gone somewhere. Then I knew this man is, you know, in trouble. So I went back to do rounds. Around 8:30 in the night, I went back to do rounds. And the moment I went to his room, he caught my hand. And he said, doctor, do something, do something, do something. I'm having pain, do something. So I said, look, I have given you, you know, yesterday the strongest of medicines I've given you. There's nothing stronger than that I can think of, you know, for pain. So I'll probably repeat it today. No. You must do something for me, you know, relieve the pain. I don't care what you do. I cannot go through one more night of pain. I'm suffering, doctor. I'm suffering. Pain. So my heart melted. I don't know what to do. I told him, close your eyes. And he closed his eyes. And you're sitting on the bed. So I have this ring, Swami's ring. So I just prayed to Swami and put the ring on his head and said, I just silent prayer to Swami. I said, Swami, I don't know what to do, you know. This fellow, I've given him everything and I'm just not able to, you know, control his pain. You are all merciful, you are all loving, and this man needs his help. So I'm praying to you to relieve him of his pain. Irrespective of what medicine I give, I don't think that's going to have the thing. it is you who is going to, you know, relieve his pain. I pray to you for this pain, and I surrender at your lotus feet, because I can't. That's it. As a doctor, I'm stumped. Now I surrender to you. You know, at the end of my thing, I have to come to you only. So you look after about 1 minute, 2 minutes. Then I told him, okay, now you open your eyes. Okay, you'll be fine. I said, before he asked me a question, I walked out of the room. Okay. As he was walking in, sister came. The nurse came. He said, today what I'll give him? Repeat the same bottles is there. I don't know of anything. I can give morphine instead of petrine. It makes not much of a difference. So I said, you give this combination, I think we'll give. I said, what time I'll give? Around 9:30 you go in the night, so it'll sleep for some time. I hope this time he sleeps. So you know, give him that, I said, and I walked out. Sister went at 9:30 to his room. The man is fast asleep. Okay. Nothing has been given to him. Not even a crocin was given to him. He is knocked out. And he's sleeping, snoring. Sound sleep. So she called me and she said, he's sleeping soundly now. What shall I do? I said, don't give it, because if you go and poke him now, he'll wake up, you know. Maybe in the night he'll get up. That time you give it him. Okay, so at least some hours he slept. Then you give him this poke, then few more hours, then tonight at least we have gone through, you know. She kept going back every 2 hours. Fellow is fast asleep. Okay. And then 7:30 in the morning he gets up. And he says, no pain, nothing, all gone. I'm fine, you know. Then he called the sister and said, what did you give me yesterday? Because he said, previous day you gave petidine, fortuin, something. So yesterday, what did you give? Then she said, I didn't give you anything, you know. Then he said, what do you mean I never gave me anything? Sir, you slept off, sir. So I didn't, then doctor said not to give you injection. How did I sleep? I said, I don't know, sir. You slept off and so this thing. I said, no, I'll wait for Dr. Mohan to come. Then I entered his room for rounds. He caught my hand again. Doctor, what did you do to me? I said, what did I do to you? Then he said, no, my pain is gone. I said, no, be happy. If your pain is gone, be happy, you know. He said, no, you did something. You made me close my eyes. And then you did something. Something on my head you put. Then after that you went off. And then I just slept off. What did you do? I just want to know what you did. I said, what does it matter what I did? Okay. You have got relief and that's what you wanted. You have got it. There ends the story. Finished. Let's not go further. Like, I didn't want to talk to a Muslim gentleman about Swami and this. And I'm a little delicate to how to explain it to him, you know. They don't accept somebody in human form as a God, you know. So only the formless God, only Allah. So I was a little embarrassed to tell him that. And in retrospect, I should not have been embarrassed. I should have told him straight away. But Swami taught me that. The next minute he taught me that. He said, I insist that I know what you did to me. And I said, okay, if you really want to know, you know, this ring of Swami is there. I put it on your head and I prayed to Swami to relieve your pain. And that's it. I didn't do anything else. That's all I did. Next sentence he tells me, your Baba is God, doctor. Only God can do that. No human being can do that. You have prayed to him and he has relieved it. That means your Baba is God. And he said, you're so lucky, doctor. You're able to see a human God. God in human form. And you're able to go to Puttaparthi. Next time you go there, please pray for me. So, it so happened that after some time when I came here, actually I could relate this in one of the speeches which Swami made me give. I mentioned, I took Swami's permission. Can I talk about it? He said, yes. So, I talked about it. Then, I'd taken his permission also. Anytime I get, can I talk about it? Oh, please. Please tell. Please tell. So, I told him that in front of Swami, I spoke about it. He said, I'm so blessed that Swami actually heard about me, you know, about it. I wish I could come to Puttaparthi and be there. Then he said, you know, in my circles, if I come, he's a very well-known man. I'll be noted immediately. So I pray, but I don't want to come there right now. I'm not yet ready to come there. But you know, you are blessed. You are able to go. Please pray for me every time you go there and all that, he says. So here is an example of where Swami's grace saves somebody, okay, from pain and from anything. I know cancers which have been cured, a lady who had cancer, completely cured by Swami. The cancer, just cancel the cancer. This pain thing, my mother went through a similar thing. She had undergone a surgery, a hip replacement surgery. She was very bad asthmatic. She's still there, quite old, but she has, I mean, from young age, she had asthma. And because this asthma, giving her anesthesia is a bit of a problem. So they had to give her an epidural. At the back, they put in like spinal. They put in a tube and then continuously the pain, because very severe pain. Hip surgery, she even underwent a hip replacement, which means you cut the hip, take out the bone and put in a steel one. So you can't, such a big bone, if you cut, you can imagine how the pain will be, you know. And you're replacing it with a steel one. That's what is called a hip replacement, you know. So she had undergone a hip replacement that night, and I was staying with her in the hospital, and she was fine until around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, around 3 o'clock, I think, in the morning. Suddenly she started shouting, you know, saying that, "Oh, Mohan, it's paining, 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 paining." She started crying. Then we called the doctor and had a look. That tube has slipped out. The one which is put inside, that has slipped out. Now, there's no way you can put it back, because that needs an anesthetist, number one. Number two, before surgery, we could bend her. And now, she's already undergone surgery and one hip has been replaced. How can you bend her again and put it back? It's not possible, you know. So, I don't know what to do. It's completely stuck. I don't know what to do. And she's crying in pain. There, at that hospital, I knelt down to Swami and I said, "Swami, I'm stuck. You know, just don't know what to do. She's in pain, Swami. This is the time when, you know, you have to come. Only divine intervention can help at this stage. So I'm praying to you, Swami. She needs help. So please help her now, Swami, and relieve her of the pain. You know, I cannot hear this. I'm shouting in pain, you know. How can I sit by her? And I don't know what to do now. One injection and all is not going to, how long? After the 4 hours, again it's going to come. Hip replacement, you know. So I just took Vibhuti. I had Vibhuti there. Put Vibhuti in her mouth. And put a little Vibhuti on her forehead and just said, "Mommy, you will be fine." In 2-3 minutes time, she just slept off. Nothing was given. Lady was shouting in pain. 2-3 minutes later, she's just finished. Swami's grace has come. No medicines, nothing for pain, you know. See, I'm not only a doctor, I'm also a scientist. So sometimes when I say this, of course, devotees, when they hear that, they'll say, yes. But sometimes when I say this, you know, the medical profession, they'll say, "Dr. Mohan, have you gone out of your head? How is it possible? You know, how is it possible? You are saying that just you put a little Vibhuti in her mouth and then the pain went away." I said, "You are saying it's not possible because you're thinking from the human level. You're forgetting for a moment that there is something above us. There is something called divine, and that God is omnipotent. He's omnipresent, so he can hear that moment. He's omniscient, he knows everything. And he's omnipotent, there's nothing he cannot do. If he can create a whole universe, a whole galaxy, a whole universe, somebody's pain he cannot relieve, you know. So you are underestimating God, you know. You're not giving enough credit to God. You're not believing in God. That is what is. We are only praying to him, not that we are only praying to him. We always pray to him. But in special situations like this, we are desperate. And we are completely surrendering to him. At that Charanagada, we're just going and saying, "Now there's nothing more but you," we are saying. You think the Lord will not listen to you at that time? Okay? Tennyson says, Alfred Lord Tennyson says, "More things are wrought by prayer than this world ever dreams of." Mahatma Gandhi has said that, "I have never known an instance in my life when God has not answered my prayers. Every single time it will come." Okay? Then people will say, "Oh, you're saying all this. That means there are so many instances where prayers have not been answered. So what do you say for that?" Atheists say that. So many people have prayed for something. If it has not happened, it's for a good reason it has not happened. It is not meant to happen. If it has happened, it's worse for you. And that is why it has not happened. Okay? If you have full faith in it, and if you surrender, and then if you pray with all your heart, Swami says, "My heart is like butter, but it still needs some warmth to melt that butter." So that is that warmth that you're talking about. That is an intense faith that you're talking about. That is that warmth that you must build up when you really pray to him. If you do that, you have to really call him from the bottom of your heart. If you do that, I have not seen a single instance when Swami has not responded. Swami will always, always, always respond. And as a medical doctor, or as a scientist, or as anything, it is that surrendering which is the most important point. Sometimes I think he brings his test to test you. Will you think of me, you know? And when will you think of me? Again, going back to Mahabharata, Draupadi, you know, he comes, but he comes a little late, you know, because she's calling to Krishna who's far away. Yes. He says, "I'm in your heart. If you're only called Krishna here, from my heart come, I would have come running to you. You prayed to the other Krishna who's far away, so I had to come all the way. Yes. So it took me some time to come, you know." Yes. So these are all instances which teach you that omnipresent, he's always there, but he's also waiting for you to call him. You call, you take the first step, I'll take 100 steps. He never said, "You don't take any step, I'll take all the steps towards you."
Yes.
He has also put a condition. You take the first step. That first step you take, I'll take 100 steps towards you. I think that is what you have to keep in mind. And it's very humbling, because we may think we're big doctors, big lawyers, big this thing, but we know how small we are when such things happen. And I think these are all humbling experiences, because they teach you that ultimately there is something beyond us. And ultimately somebody else is curing. So when somebody gets better, we say, ah, we cured him and so on. Next instance, we'll know that we were wrong. One of my ENT surgeons, who's my classmate, used to say that he'll have two patients. One will be a young person who, in a very early stage of disease, it has been detected, cancers, two cancers, very early stage of, and he'll remove the entire tumor, okay? And he'll say that you are completely cured. Next 20 years, no problem for you, okay? The other will be an older person who has a little more advanced disease, so he could not even do the full treatment for the person. So he'll tell them very guarded prognosis, you know, maximum 6 months, 1 year. 10 years later, that fellow will be still alive. This fellow, some recurrence would have come within 6 months, and he would have died within 6 months to 1 year. So he says, as a medical doctor, with all the knowledge that we have, of course we're able to, I'm not saying you cannot prognosticate. I'm not saying there's no medical science, you can't say this will do well, that will do well. In general, you can get it done. Statistics. If you take 80%, this will happen, 20%, that will happen. All that is true. If you do science properly, you'll be able to show. But in a given individual, can you say that? You will be alright. You will not be alright. Can we say that? No. We cannot say that. Because that God decides. That person's fate is decided by God. In general, you can say, you do this treatment, 80% do well. You do this treatment, 60% will do well. What about 40%? What about 20%? There's always something there. So every time we submit and we say, well, I have done what I have to do. Now you pray. And it's your karma, what you have to get from God, that part. But I have done my job. We have done what we can do. Okay? Now you pray to the Almighty. And he will do the best for you.
Surgeon only cuts, God heals.
God heals. Absolutely
as they
right.
Say. But when did this belief in that higher power, or this tremendous faith in something which is definitely beyond all science and beyond all medicine, firm up in you?
In me. I'm trying to write a book on Swami, and I hope this book will see the light of day. It's a long gestation. I wrote something, kept it away. Then now if very actively Swami has given me some signs that I better get on with it. So I've started doing it, and this has this answer in it and the chapter in it. I'll give you one example of that. I'm giving a preview of the one of the chapters in the book. So here, and it's not directly related to Swami. I was not a Swami's devotee until 1992 in that sense. Although he has later shown me that all the gods you prayed to are I used to pray to God, but he later showed that any god you prayed to is me. And that later on it came. But it's only in 92 actually when I took my official first step to Swami and then became his devotee and then started praying to him. And now literally I don't pray to any other god, because I feel all gods are the same. All Swami is all gods. So if I pray to him, I'm praying to all gods. I'm against no god. I'm not against any god, because all gods are the same. But for me, Swami is enough. I don't need any other god. You know, so I literally don't even go to temples now. Because when I go there, I also pray to Swami only. I feel coming to Puttaparthi to see the living God in his presence is actually better. So without any people say, oh, you stopped going to Shabarimala, you stopped going there, you stopped going there. It's not necessary. Because ultimately, I'm seeing God here. And same, if I go to Ayyappa also, he's also Baba only.
Yes.
So to me, it makes no difference. So those who are going to Ayyappa, fine, let them continue to go. They are seeing God in that form. I'm seeing God in this form. Each one has his own chosen deity. For me, my chosen deity is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. I don't have any other God. I can openly say that. Okay? Because all gods are the same. If I pray to Jesus also, I'm praying to him only. And Jesus is also God. So it doesn't matter at all. You choose one. If you have two paths to come to Puttaparthi, one along this way and one along the other way, some prefer that for some particular reason. The scenery is good, the road is smaller, but it's more rustic, it looks nice through the village. No, I want to go through the highway, I want to come fast, this is that. Some prefer that. Some fellows say, what boring highway, this is very much better. Different. Ultimately, you come to Puttaparthi. It doesn't matter which way you come. So similarly, roads to God also are different. But let me go back to your question. So there was this boy in school who was my junior. And he was a little poor. He was a Sai devotee. So there is a link in that way. I wasn't at that time, but he was. And he was one of the few Sai devotees that I knew of at that time. This is 1960s probably. Yeah, 1960s. So this boy,
he came in Chennai.
I was studying in school in St. Mary's High School. And this boy was 1 year junior to me. And since he could not afford, every year when I pass out, he'll come and ask for some books to me. My books. So that he can save on the textbooks were very expensive those days. Some of them were very expensive. I remember this March of Times, a very expensive book. Even those days, it was a few hundred rupees, you know. So it's a beautiful book called March of Times. So I had this book, and so he came and asked me, can you give me the March of Times? And already it's a slow thing. So 2 months, 3 months after that, only he'll think of the book itself. So already we are into February, March, and I've already finished 2-3 months in my next class. I've forgotten where my old books are, nothing. But he asked me in school, will you give me the March of Times? And I said, yeah, I'll give you, come home, come at 4:30 at home after class, after school, you come, I'll give you, I said. I had no idea where this book was, okay. Promptly at 4:30, he landed up. Suddenly, I panicked because I didn't know where the book was. I have many faults in life, but one of the things I don't have is once I make a promise, I normally don't break it. And from childhood, it's been like that. I never like to break a promise given to anyone, for that matter. And I promised him I'll give it, you know. And he has landed up there at 4:30. He's rung the bell. My servant came and told me he has come. I panicked because I didn't know where this book was. I had absolutely no idea where this book was, okay. So what I did was, I just knelt down and prayed to God in general. Not to Baba at that time, because I was not a Baba devotee, but just to God. And I said, okay, God, okay, I don't know where this book is. I made a promise to him. I don't want to break my promise. I don't know where the book is, but you know where the book is. You get me that book now, okay. And till you get that book, I'm going to remain like this now. You show me where the book is. And then I will go and give this book to him. If you do that, I'll believe that there is a God. There is a superpower, okay. If not, then there is no God. Because you can't do this for me, then what can you do, you know. So you prove to me now. Because I'm in a thing now where I want to know whether it is God or no God and so on. So now I'm going to wait here now till you give me the answer. Okay, direct test to
and
God.
And how old were you then?
I was in the 7th standard. So I must have been what, 11, something like that?
Yeah.
So I was still kneeling. Then I closed my eyes. I don't know how many minutes. I lost count of time, you know. So I was kind of meditating like that, sitting like that and saying, yeah, book, 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 book. Now tell me. Where's the book? Where's the book? Where's the book? Suddenly, I saw the book in the most unusual, unexpected place. There is outside my house, this is in Royapuram, an old house, there was an electric meter room, you know. It's a small room about, say, 6 feet by 2 feet or 3 feet, you know. It's a small room where the only activity there is once a month from the electricity department, they'll come and they'll read the electricity meter. That was there, the meter was on the wall. And the only other thing which used to keep, those days we had used charcoal for fire, we didn't have gas. So charcoal. So sack of charcoal, when the once a month the charcoal, big charcoal sack will come. So my gardener, nobody goes inside that room. Only my gardener goes inside that room. Okay. So sack of charcoal comes and he'll open it and put it there. And the electricity man comes, he'll take. There's only 2 times that is opened. Okay. But here I am seeing it in my mind. The charcoal is there, sack. And on that March of Names is sitting.
It's sort of a mental vision.
Yeah, I'm seeing it. I'm actually seeing it. I can see the charcoal and I can see the March of Time sitting on it. Okay. Now, that's not a place you keep books at all. But I've seen it. I've already seen it. I've asked, either he has shown it to me there, but I think he has teleported it. Because it could not have come there. I'll tell you why he has teleported it. So, I walk out. So, I'm so confident that it is there. So, I walk out. This boy is there and I say, come, we'll go. I'll get you the book. You know. Then I called the gardener and said, get me the room key. So he asked me, why do you want that room key? I said, no, there's some book in it. No, sir, there's no book and all in it, sir. No, I said, bring, it is there. Let's go. He said, there's no book, sir. I keep everything. There's nothing there, sir. Only this meter. No, no, you bring the key, I said. So he went there, and I'm calling the boy, come, I'll give it to you. No, so confident I'm, because I've seen it. No, there. In my vision, he has shown it. So I said, okay, come. Open the door, on the sack of charcoal, March of Times is sitting.
Wow.
Only one book. Only March of Times. Nothing else. Okay. I take the March of Times. There's no charcoal on it. Nothing is there. It has been placed there at that time. Why charcoal room? Why this? Maybe to make it so extraordinary that the story will... If I found it in some, you know, where you keep books or something in my place, then probably it's not so extraordinary. Maybe to reinforce the faith, he took it. So I took it from him, gave it to him and said, okay, thank you. Are you happy? Oh, thank you so much, he said, and he went off. Till today, I have not told him about this miracle. I still know him. He's still, Sai devotee is a thing. He's still my friend, he's thing. Till today, I have not told him the story, you know. But that convinced me at that age that there is something beyond us. And when we need to reach out, you know, somebody said, I think it was Francis Bacon or somebody who said, that if everything was available to you and given to you, what are the heavens for? You know, the heavens are there for you to stretch out. If already everything is given to you, there's no need for heavens, you know. But the heavens are there for you when you need something, okay, you reach out and it shall be given to you. And that was the first example. I started other experiments, you know. Can you do something superhuman if you use the power of God, you know? So, for example, I was a shot put champion, okay. So, every day I would practice shot put, and I knew my distance, because every day I was practicing for the event. I later became the athletic captain of my college, MMC team, and intermedical champion, and so on. So, I know my distance, and every day evening I used to practice this. So, I know so many meters, so many 0.2, 0.3, I have a thing, I used to measure it. So, one of those thing in college, this is in college now, intermedical competition, there was a guy from Tanjore who was actually throwing more than me, so he was little ahead of me, okay. And I have never thrown that in my life. The distance which he has covered, I don't know how much it was, 9.8 meters, something like that. He had thrown that, and I was clearly about half a meter or 1 meter less than him. I'm already doing my best, because I do it every day, so I know my best. They give you 6 throws, you know. So 5 throws are over, his throw is already over, so he's still half a meter ahead of me. So I take this shot put in my hand, and I just turn around, you know, and then I'm telling God, okay, I'm going to try this now, okay? I'm not going to throw, you're going to throw this, okay? And one test more I just need for my final thing that, you know, your power is much more than what we mortals can do. Can you help me with this to achieve something, not to win that, but to show that I can do something much more if I use your power, you know? So can you help me to do that? So I said, okay, now I'm going to do it, I said. So I just prayed to him and get an answer. He said, now I'm going to do it. Now I'm going to test. Let's see what happens. So I go and throw. It goes about a meter and a half more than what that guy has thrown.
Oh my God.
I am looking at myself and saying, did I throw that? You know, it's like this Blackbeard's Ghost movie and all, no? Where he'll come and walk with it. You've seen that movie where he carries it and goes. It's something like that. And I said, my God. Hereafter, I'm not going to test you. No need for any more tests, you know. But I'll come to you whenever I need some help of some kind, not to win a thing like this, but whenever I need help to help people, at least I can use it, you know. So from that, you know, there's no more question of God or this thing. And so if, now I feel, you know, when people question, is there a God? Is there a thing? Do such experiments, please, you know, and convince yourself. Swami also says, test me as many times. But after you have been convinced, then don't try to question me or try to understand me, because it's beyond your capacity. You're an ordinary mortal. Can you understand me? Can you understand my universe? Can you understand what I created? Can you understand why I'm doing certain things? It's beyond you. Don't even waste your time. Okay? First you do all your experiments to develop the faith. Once you develop the faith, surrender. After that, so that's exactly what I've done in my life. The first few years went in all this. After that, I realized, oh my God, there's something there which we can use for helping people and so on. So, initially, we pray only for, you know, help me pass the exam, help me get this. That's how we pray. But eventually, you start praying for other people, helping people, and the profession, you know, make this man okay, make the thing. And then you start
seeing. You need the help of God so much in this profession.
In everything. Every time, you know, I've seen surgeons. Experienced surgeons, every time, I've seen a Christian gentleman, every time before he puts his first thing, he'll make the sign of the cross, then only he'll put his first incision. At that crucial moment, you need God, you know. Because otherwise that one little thing you make can go, it can damage the liver, damage something, because you think you're doing it. And then, with all your skills, you may make a mistake. So he's still praying to God, protect me, take me along, this person has come to me for my help, please be with me as I serve this person. Then you'll see the difference. But many people become arrogant, you know. It's me, I'm the greatest, I'm this, I'm that, and think your downfall will come. Because ultimately your downfall will come because arrogance. You know, it happened to Ravana, it happened to Karna, it happened to whoever, you know, had thought that they were the greatest. Ultimately history has proved that they were not. You know, they might have been very, very great. But without that grace of God, that ultimate thing, it doesn't happen. So that is where I think Swami has been teaching us all along, you know. Of course, his principles are so simple. That's what attracted me. Love all, serve all, help ever, hurt never, even if you can't oblige, speak obligingly.
Yes.
You know, these are all things which are so simple to apply in daily life. I see somebody will come to me for a favor which I cannot do. Okay, I simply cannot do it. Be nice to him and say, I would have loved to do this for you, you know, and I wish I could have done it, but it's not in my hands to do that, you know. And so, I wish you all the very best. I'll even pray for you for it. But in this particular thing, please excuse me, I'm not able to do it, you know. If you say that, that man will never be angry with you. He still knows you're not done it for him, you know. But it's for a reason you're not able to do, you know. So, speak obligingly. So these things I think what Swami has taught us, which we'll never forget. Throughout our life, his teachings are always there.
Wow, amazing. I mean, people know about your experiments in the field of medicine, but I think not many know about your experiments with God. And that is actually the basis, how it turns out, for all the success that you have achieved in your life. How was it when you received Padma Shri from the President's hands?
In one of my trips to Puttaparthi, 2-3 years before I got the Padma Shri, Swami had actually hinted.
Is it?
Not directly as in telling me you will get Padma Shri, but through an indirect episode. I can't actually explain it properly, but he had kind of told me that...
You knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming. Because he had given me the sign, you know, saying that... In fact, it mentioned Padma Shri. That is
what he mentioned. Swami had mentioned.
Padma Shri he had mentioned.
Wow.
So I knew it's coming. Then I was nominated once some few years ago, that year. I thought, no, he's given me the sign. And so when somebody said, shall I nominate, I got myself nominated. So I didn't get it that year. So I said, okay, maybe, you know, I misunderstood the sign. It may not be. The next year, Swami said something about, why are you going after material things or something like that? So then when somebody said they'll nominate me, I said, don't nominate me. You know, I don't want. I refused to get nominated. So that is the second year. The first year I was nominated, I never got. Second year, I never went for the nomination. Third year, I was not nominated. Without being nominated, that is, I didn't send in, I never knew. Somebody told me that I'm getting Padma Shri. Okay. They said, you have been shortlisted. Your name. I said, how can it be? When I've not sent in an official nomination, how can... No, somebody from Delhi has nominated. Anybody in the country can nominate. You don't need to know. You don't have to sign. You don't have to do anything. Anybody can nominate. Somebody in Delhi has nominated. I didn't believe it until they came for the inspection. You know, when the final stage comes, they'll come for inspection. So they came for the inspection. And then it's already shortlisted. The president's physician told me congratulations, and he announced it in front of, this is the year before I got it, incidentally, not the year I got it, okay. The president's physician in a meeting 2 days before, it's announced in Republic Day as you know, 2 days before there is a meeting in Chennai, and he announced it to everyone, Dr. Mohan is getting Padma Shri, and everybody clapped and cheered and so on. Morning when the papers came, my name is not there. It was the most embarrassing thing in my life. And I had not even applied, you know. I never applied. I was not nominated. I didn't know I was nominated. I didn't know anything. But they came for the inspection. The final inspection, the income tax will come, this will come, police will come, verification. Everything happened. But in the last minute, some political thing takes place and my name was removed, okay. My wife was very ill at the time. And so she knew this in January, the year of Swami Samadhi also. And my wife actually passed away 30 days before that, on March 25th. So she knew she won't be there for the next year, you know. So she told me, you're disappointed. I said, I'm not, because I didn't apply. So how can I be disappointed when I'm not? I'm only a little bit ashamed because this fellow announced in front of everyone. He could have kept quiet. He announced it and then, you know, I didn't get it. So people will think, you know, what's happening, you know. So I wish he had not said anything and I could have, I never applied, I never asked for it, never asked anything. Then she said, you will get it next year. Okay, I won't be here, but I will let you know that I know that you got it. And next year you're getting it, she said. Next year I was nominated. The year I got it, I was actually nominated because people said, you come so close, you've been shortlisted. Now why are you not allowing yourself to be nominated? So 2-3, because the same guys who had knew that, you know, this had happened and so on. This guy also who had announced it, he was also feeling very bad. So I got multiple nominations from my society, from this, from my association. Everyone nominated me the next year. Okay. Then... my wife passed away, Mahasamadhi also occurred that year, 2011. So 2011, 2012 nominations took place and I was nominated and so on. And this time many people told me I'm getting it because from Delhi itself they said you're getting it, you're getting it. I said I don't know, it's happened so many times and you know I'm not interested. So I don't, at this thing, no, you're getting it, you're getting it. Then they again came for inspection, they came for everything this time. And the guy who came for inspection said, sir, your name is first in the list. So you will definitely get this year, he told me. So that morning... on January 25th, 12 o'clock, they'll call from the home office and say the president is thing has selected your name. That morning, I went into my office. I keep a garland for Swami. You know, every morning for Swami and for my wife. Two fresh garlands. I personally put it. I'll say I have to put it every day. I went and sat there around 9 o'clock in the morning. Swami's garland started shaking, and it fell. The whole garland fell. Okay? So I went back and put it. Then my wife's garland started shaking. It never happened so many days before. And after that also, last 2 years also it has not, 1.5 years also it has not happened. Okay? Her garland started shaking. She said, I'll let you know. When you get it, I won't be there, but I'll let you know, she said. I will be there and I'll let you know that you got it. So, then it started shaking. That fell. Then I went and put that back. Then Swami started shaking and fell. I put it back. Then her started shaking and it fell. Four times that fell, four times this fell in a matter of 2 hours. Okay, never before, never after it has happened, only on that day. The last time after one of these fell, I think the Swami's last which fell, and even my secretary is asking, why sir, it is shaking like this thing, that is shaking, this is shaking. It's shaking like this, you know. And the thing, I said, I don't know, but how can I tell her, you know, maybe because I'm getting this thing. So I said, I was telling myself, 12 o'clock I'll know when I'm getting. 12 o'clock call came, saying that the president has selected you for Padma Shri. Will you accept? Because that time also you can refuse. If you say, you know, many people refuse, saying that, no, I should have got bigger one, not this one. You know, this controversy goes on. So I said, I'm humbled to accept, I will think. But both Swami and my wife were letting me know that they know, you know. So, and he had already given me a signal years ago. But then in his time, only it will come. You know, when I really applied for it and all, I never got it. But then in his time, it will come. But he had given me an indication. So I know it is Swami's grace only that has also come. Of course, it's very nice because the function is extremely well organized. And you meet the president, you meet the prime minister. Almost the entire cabinet is there. The vice president was there. Sonia Gandhi was there. I mean, the whole cabinet. You have a one-to-one session with them. They all come and congratulate you. You have group pictures with them, photographs. So it's a very
And you
nice
get more credibility to do his work.
And coming from Tamil Nadu, it's good because it's a credit for Tamil Nadu. Get for a doctor, so for the profession, it is good. So it's not just for me, but for the work you do. Then from institutions, a very big thing, you know, because for all the people, almost 1,100 people work for me now. So for all of them, it's a recognition of the work, and I don't think it's for one person that you get it. Yes. It's for the work that you do. So that way it is always satisfying. But again, it is Swami, and without Swami, I don't think all these things can happen.
Well, I think from that time onwards, when Swami made you see that book, where it is, I think he's been there all
that. That chap is a side devotee, so that is a link. So if you say, how does Swami come into it? That chap is a side devotee, one of the few side devotees I knew in my life at that time, you know. And it's to him it has happened.
Yes.
So again, the link comes through Swami only.
You just heard the second part of the conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent Indian diabetologist from Chennai, South India. He is the chairman and chief of diabetology at Dr. Mohan's Diabetes Specialty Center. This institution, based in Chennai, is a World Health Organization collaborating center for prevention and control of non-communicable diseases and also an International Diabetes Federation center of education. Dr. V. Mohan is also the convener of the Sri Sathya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu, since November 2007. In the third part of this conversation, Dr. Mohan narrates certain powerful instances which instilled tremendous faith in him in the early years of his association with Bhagwan. In conversation with him was Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti, and this was recorded in November 2013. If you have any queries or comments, please write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sai Ram.